Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, Kaiser Permanente, and the California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org.
This is Valley Edition, FM 89's weekly look at the issues that matter to the residents of the San Joaquin Valley.
Hello, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and welcome to Valley Edition. On today's program, moving Fresno County's health program for the poor into the 21st century, why county supervisors said no to millions of dollars targeted for low-income health reform. We talked to Diana Dooley, Secretary, California Health and Human Services. Also joining us is the director of Kern County's low-income health plan. We will ask her how the county is making it work, plus how advocates are using the theater to fight obesity here in the Valley. First, the winds of healthcare reform are blowing across California. Many counties are embracing the change and moving ahead with a program designed to prepare local areas for the Affordable Health Care Act, also called Obamacare. The plan is set to go into effect in 2014, and the federal government is offering counties millions of dollars to change the way they provide health care to the poorest of the poor. All counties said yes to the program except Fresno. Supervisors made a decision to keep its indigent care program just the way it is. Community Regional Medical Center, located in downtown Fresno, is where the poorest of Fresno County residents go for medical care.
The county was providing the services at the old Valley Medical Center, and Community Medical Centers took it over in 1996. For about then, it was about $18 million a year, and providing basically Medi-Cal level services.
For the past 15 years, Community has operated what is called the Medically Indigent Services Program. It is the most basic of treatment, no preventative or wellness care, with most patients seeing emergency room doctors. Those with chronic illnesses like diabetes can go to one of Community's specialty clinics. But Stephen Walter, Chief Financial Officer at Community, says those facilities are so crowded and impacted that many patients will wait until they get sick. Those patients then end up in the emergency department along with everyone else.
We triage patients as they come in. Someone with a heart attack, a stroke, compound fractures from an auto accident, all of that, they're going to get triaged and they get seen quicker. The people that come in with a cough, I don't feel well, that sort of thing, they're going to have to wait until the more critical patients are seen first.
Community, along with many other health professionals, agrees that this is not the best way to operate a medical program.
The program is cumbersome, and it's expensive to run, as it's entirely hospital-based.
Kevin Hamilton is an administrator with Clinica Sierra Vista, one of the largest primary care community health centers in the region. At its clinic in downtown Fresno, low-income patients can get a wide range of services.
Justin?
We provide family health care, we provide pediatrics, we provide OBGYN care, and same-day appointments.
Hamilton says as primary care providers, their job is to offer the preventative care that will keep patients well at home and out of emergency rooms. Walter agrees that moving the county's poor into a managed care system would save the hospital money.
That would be the way to reduce those costs, reduce those emergency admissions. The problem is that it takes a change from what we're doing currently to going that direction.
The current contract Community has with the county doesn't provide primary care for the poor. But for more than a year, both parties have been examining ways to improve the current system.
Around November of 2010, the Department of Public Health really got involved in looking at what that meant for Fresno County in terms of an opportunity to expand on indigent health care and also to expand on managed care Medi-Cal into the future.
That's Dr. Edward Moreno, who heads the county's Department of Public Health. What prompted this reevaluation of the county system is health care reform. In 2014, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, often called Obamacare, goes into effect. It will make many more of the nation's poor eligible for Medi-Cal. In an effort to help with the transition, the federal government is offering the state matching funds to set up a bridge program called the Low-Income Health Plan. It would change the way the county treats its indigent population, estimated at about 18,000 people.
It really wants people to go into that managed care environment, focused on the primary care, medical home. There's lots of words for it. But really getting those patients to get that one-on-one connection with the doctor as opposed to going to the ED.
Under the low-income health plan, Fresno County would receive matching funds for the $20 million it already pays community to provide the care. Some estimates show the county could end up with more than $50 million in funding.
This low-income health program would have provided assistance to additional health care enhancements to the poorest people in Fresno County and poorest and most vulnerable, and that's why we were somewhat very interested in doing this.
After hiring consultants and meeting with stakeholders for more than a year, the county concluded there were too many risks involved in adopting the low-income health plan. During what was a heated Board of Supervisors meeting, Supervisors Debbie Puchigian, Phil Larson, and Judy Case voted to withdraw the county's application.
I'm not in favor of the federal program for health care expansion because I don't see basic personal responsibility as a part of it. But the risk element of this is really the biggest problem.
That's Supervisor Judy Case. Supervisors Anderson and Perea didn't support that decision.
Well, the point is community hospital is willing to negotiate. And I think as long as we have an opportunity with funds on the table to provide that flexibility, we should take it.
Why would we vote on this idea that we're not even going to discuss this anymore, we're not even going to look at the options?
Despite the opposition, Fresno became the only county in the state to turn down federal dollars to set up the low-income health plan for the county's poor, and the estimated 500 jobs that would come with it.
We were dumbfounded because here's a potential $56 million coming into the community that not only would be able to provide medical services for people who really need it in the community at a much more cost-effective rate than we are currently doing it, but also with the high unemployment that we have in the Valley, the fact that this money could have created up to 500 new jobs. And they said, we're not interested. It's just almost beyond explanation.
Chris Schneider says that vote has Central California Legal Services considering legal action. Among other concerns, Schneider believes one of the supervisors had a conflict of interest and should have stepped away from the vote because she works at St. Agnes Hospital.
At the meeting where the supervisors took this vote, Supervisor Case admitted that what the county does would have an impact on other hospitals in the community, including St. Agnes. At that point, we believe she should have declared that she had a conflict of interest.
So, what went wrong? What caused supervisors to withdraw their application for a program nearly all say would benefit the county? First, to get federal dollars, Fresno County would have to end or amend its current contract with Community Regional Medical Center. Under the contract, the county pays Community $20 million to provide medical care to the county's poor. County officials admit it's a sweet deal for them. Fresno County has paid about the same amount of money for more than a decade, while Community has seen its cost go up.
Now we're experiencing costs of $80 million a year.
Another sticking point, what to do about the undocumented aliens now receiving care as part of the county's contract with Community. Federal money can't be used to provide medical services to those here illegally.
It's about a third of the medically indigent adult population that we're serving. And those people would not be eligible, and they are not eligible for Medicare, Medi-Cal, or the LIHP program.
If Fresno County adopted the low-income health plan and still wanted to provide medical services to the undocumented, the county would have to foot the estimated $20 million bill itself.
That's a big piece of the problem, and I'm not sure exactly how we solve that, but that needs to be part of the conversation.
Fresno County Supervisor Susan Anderson also believes there was a lot of confusion surrounding the entire process. She says those studying the proposal believe they had been given direction to look at setting up a low-income health plan without changing the county's contract with community.
The contract is such a critical piece that you can't do this without looking at the contract.
With so much confusion, community and the majority of the Board of Supervisors just couldn't move forward, saying there was too much risk involved. But many health advocates say that was no reason to withdraw the county's application.
This isn't something that's foreign to the Valley. Other Valley counties are doing it. They're being successful with it.
The fallout from the supervisors' vote may give the plan a second chance. In a recent letter to Board Chairman Phil Larson, Community Regional Medical Center CEO Tim Jocelyn offered up a solution. Jocelyn's proposal would scrap the hospital's current contract with the county and return control of indigent care back to the Board of Supervisors. The county could use the estimated $60 million in funds to set up the low-income health plan, a primary care-based program administered by provider CalViva Health Systems. Supervisor Perea warned his colleagues that if they don't look for solutions, the inaction could force the hospital to ask to renegotiate its current contract.
I think what we basically are doing is setting the stage for a very weak hand from the county's perspective when Community Hospital knocks on our door, probably in the very near future, to either renegotiate their current agreement or to eliminate it. Okay, that's coming. We all know that's coming.
If community can show that the number of patients it serves has increased by 10%, the medical center can renegotiate its current contract with the county. Here to discuss the issue with us is Kevin Hamilton, deputy chief at Clinica Sierra Vista. And we do want to mention that we did reach out to supervisors Debbie Puchigan and Judy Case, but due to prior commitments, they couldn't join us today. Plus, the Board of Supervisors meets on Tuesdays. So I want to thank Mr. Hamilton for joining us. First of all, how does Clinica Sierra Vista fit into this discussion?
Clinica Sierra Vista is one of the largest community health centers in the United States. We provide safety net care, primary care, OBGYN and other types of care, as well as dental care for children, to a wide variety of people, and our primary payer is Medicaid, or in California, the Medi-Cal program. One of the ideas around LIHP is that it would be vended out to the people through the CalViva Medi-Cal product. So we would become one of the major providers of primary care for those folks, unlike the present model, which has Community Medical Center as the major primary care provider for those folks.
And a lot of people are saying that this would be more economically feasible because those people would be seeing, would be getting primary care at the clinics.
That's the idea. We're preventative medicine people. We spend a lot of time with folks making sure their diabetes isn't out of control, their high blood pressure isn't out of control, their asthma isn't out of control. We make sure they get the immunizations that they need. And when they don't feel well, when they've got a headache, when they've got a cold, they can come to us instead of doing what they do now, which is call an ambulance and have them give them a ride to Community Medical Center's ER because they have no other choice. That's the only place that their quote-unquote insurance through the Medically Indigent Services Program it allows them to go.
And it was part of the stumbling block the fact that part of the goal is to provide a better access to people living in rural areas. And if I recall, community just doesn't have those clinics out in any rural areas.
That's correct. They have a contract with a single provider out in Mendota to provide some care and one out in Auberry. They really don't have any community access into the rural areas. And even the urban access is limited to the downtown hospital site. And Fresno is a very large city with difficult transportation problems and a lot of poverty. And folks have been known to call an ambulance just to go the 2 or 3 miles that it takes to get from their house to the hospital, again, for just not feeling well, because they don't have the money for a taxi and they don't have an automobile. So the idea of having a number of different sites, not just with Clinica Sierra Vista, but with other community health centers in the county, allowing there to be a primary care network that literally spanned the whole geography of the county through this newly proposed LIHP idea is very attractive and would save a fortune in health care for this population.
And I should say, LIHP means the low-income health plan.
Low-income health plan. Right. We've gotten a little casual about that acronym.
Well,
I'm
sorry. Well, you guys have been in the fight for a long time. Now, we hear
I'd like
term...
to think of it as a long-term negotiation.
Okay. Well, we hear the term indigent. About how many people are we talking about, and what kind of income level are we talking about?
We're talking about people with an income level of less than 117% of the poverty line. A little over $1,000 a month. These are folks who often are working poor or on fixed income. They may be homeless. There's probably somewhere north of 40,000 of these people out in the county. Estimates have been as high as 70,000. Community takes care of about 17,000 right now.
Okay. Are you hopeful that the county and all those stakeholders will be able to get back together and kind of revisit this issue?
Yes, absolutely. I think that's where we need to go. I think the county was premature in stepping away. I thought it was a really quite radical step to say, no, we're not even going to talk about this anymore. I mean, certainly all the issues weren't brought to the table. County staff was directed very narrowly to look at this as a function of the existing county contract and only determine if this could be successful with one partner. That was Community Regional Medical Center. They need to be retasked to look at this more broadly. What if we brought in this safety care network that is comprised of the community health center system and do some cost analysis around that?
Now, to our listeners out there, we have a question for you. What do you think about this whole effort to try to change the way we are providing care here in Fresno County? We know it's a complicated issue, but we'd still like to hear from you. You can give us a call at 800-224-8989 or 559-275-8989 or online at talk@kvpr.org. At this point, I also want to bring in Kern County. Now, Kern County has set up a low-income health plan. Joining us now to discuss how they did it is J.C. Cooper, Senior Project Manager, Kern Medical Center Health Plan. Thanks for joining us, J.C.
Hello.
Hello. How long has Kern County been in the program?
Well, Kern County was a part of the original 1115 waiver that was put into operation back in 2007. So Kern has been running a pilot program under the first waiver since September 1st, 2007, and then renewed and went live with their low-income health program, or LIP, on July 1st, 2011.
Now, what are some of the factors that went into the county setting up the program? Basically, what did it take?
Well, under the first waiver, we had a good start. We had contracts with some of the community clinics in Kern County to provide primary care in the outlying areas. We had policies and procedures, a care management program, and claims processing. But to switch over to the low-income health program, we had to look at a few other items to get up and running. We revised all of our contracts. We brought on Clinica Sierra Vista, who has a large presence here in Kern County as well, to provide care in corners of the county that we could not provide, and to provide a stronger presence in Kern County and Bakersfield itself. So we revised all of our contracts. We had to negotiate a contract with mental health because one of the benefits under the low-income health program is a mental health benefit. Kern County decided to add on a substance abuse benefit with that, which is considered an add-on. So we had to do a number of contract negotiations to get things up and running to meet the network adequacy requirements of the program. We also implemented a full UM team utilization management, a 24-hour nurse line, and a number of other member services for our patients.
So if I can calculate, you said you started like in 2004 and it went online in 2007?
Oh, no, the waiver was signed in 2006. We went up in 2007 with the original waiver and then did the transitions over probably the last year and a half for the LIP.
Okay. So you would say it took you, what, a year, year and a half to kind of get this up and going?
Oh, definitely, especially in regards to contract negotiations and getting things in place to make it successful.
Okay. And we have Mr. Hamilton here with Clinic Sierra Vista. Now, what you're providing in Kern County is what you're saying you would try to do here in Fresno County, right?
That's correct.
And that is in these outlying areas have that kind of service.
We have other partners in the outlying areas like United Health Centers who would also share in that responsibility.
Stacy, when it came to implementing this, how were the supervisors? Were they on board? I'm sure, you know, with the process, did you have a lot of going back and forth, or did most people take a hard look at this and say, well, you know, this is something we need to do?
We had a lot of support from our Board of Supervisors. We have been in constant communication with them from the previous waiver up until the new waiver. I'm really communicating the success of the program. Not only has the medical center been able to create a very good relationship with our community partners, we've seen success across the board in regards to decreasing not only ER costs and visits per members in the program, as well as total costs for enrolled members in the program by getting them into the primary care and kind of very reducing the episodic ED care that we've seen.
Now, has Kern County been able to bring in more people under this model to give care to more people under this model?
We have. Under the previous waiver, we were providing care to about 5,500 enrollees in a given month, and we have already increased up to 7,000 and hope to get to up to 25,000 by the end of the low-income health program in 2013.
Now, do you think this is preparing Kern County for the President's Health Care Act set to go into effect in 2014?
Yes, for a number of reasons. One, it allows us to slowly grow as our program grows, our primary and specialty care provider base, to really anticipate what's going to come with the large number of Medi-Cal patients in 2014. We're also able to get a first step in regards to preventive and primary care for these patients, and it really does reach out, even though we're only going up to 100% federal poverty level in Kern, to a large number of patients currently not getting any medical care right now.
What is 100% of poverty? What income level are we talking about?
That is around the $1,000 a month income, so, maybe a little less, depending on number of households.
Okay. So is there any way that income level is going to be increased to provide care to people? Perhaps maybe that's very, very poverty line, but you know, working families or anything like that?
Under the previous waiver, we did go up to 200% federal poverty level. But given some of the changes with the low-income health program and some of the benefits under the program, we did drop down to 100%. If we feel over the next year, we're going to do a large financial analysis of the program to make sure, one, we're still seeing decreases and that we have a good handle in regards to the new benefits under LIP, yes, we would consider increasing back up to all the way up to 200%. But we would do it in small steps, probably up to the 133, which is the top cap, which would really be a smooth transition for 2014. And then go from there.
So you would say this has worked out well for Kern County. Kern County sees this as a good thing?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us on this conversation. It was very enlightening about what's going on in Kern County.
No problem.
So, Kevin, when we hear that and how that's working there and Kern County was able to do that, what do you think we can learn from Kern County?
I think my first emotion there was, this breaks my heart. The second for my county. The second thing is, of course, it's quite obvious that this is completely doable. Kern County is very similar to us in many, many, many ways, from politically all the way down to the types and number of patients that we serve, general population, and the businesses that drive that community. So it's fairly obvious that it can be done. I don't think it would take us as long because we have Kern County, and Kern County has offered to help us through the process, and they have a template. So it's really helpful when somebody has already broken the path ahead of you, so you don't have to find your way through the woods, so to speak. So I think that's an amazing thing, and gives me great hope.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin. Well, the state would like for counties to embrace the opportunity to change their low-income plan. We talked to Secretary of the California Department of Health and Human Services, Diana Dooley, and we asked her what this program is designed to do, for what purpose.
The low-income health program was a program established in 2010 between the state of California and the federal government as a bridge to reform. It is a way that California counties can provide additional services to people who will be eligible for Medi-Cal in 2014 but are now a part of the indigent population in the counties. So the counties now have an obligation to meet minimal needs of the indigent adult population. This will give counties an opportunity to use federal funds in a one-for-one match to expand the services to this population before they're eligible for full Medi-Cal in 2014. So it is a bridge between their current program and the full Medi-Cal benefits under the Affordable Care Act.
How are counties responding to this?
All of the counties have made application. Many of them have gone forward already with the implementation of the program. The federal participation requires that there be a match of government funds. The state doesn't have the money at this point to go early into healthcare reform, but the counties who are spending money on these needs of these citizens already can use that money to leverage additional federal funds. So most counties are doing that. But to be clear, there are additional responsibilities that go with these additional federal funds.
What are some of those responsibilities?
The counties will have to meet a certain new minimum level of benefits, and they are, I think, counties like Fresno that have some reservation are based on the fear that the current funds available will not be sustained. So I think, without speaking for them, there is some nervousness about entering into a program that the federal funds may dry up at some point. Most counties are taking the funds now that are available and meeting needs of the people in their counties and recognizing that the future is uncertain for everyone. But what we do know is there's money available now, and they're taking advantage of the funds that are now available.
What was your reaction when Fresno County withdrew its application?
I understand the needs of Fresno County, the pressures on the decision makers there, as well as the extraordinary need of the citizens and the people that live in the valley. It's a very underserved area. It has been medically needy by any definition for a long time. So I have worked with our State Department of Healthcare Services to offer assistance to the County of Fresno to resolve their concerns and try to address the technical questions that have arisen. I would be very happy to help in whatever way we can, but I do recognize that it is a local decision, and I respect the local decision makers.
Well, you know, you talked about some people having the concerns that the federal dollars may not be there. But either way, counties have to pay this cost.
Yes, and the the cost that they are incurring is for a lower set of benefits. It's very minimal care that is required in emergency circumstances and in some basic services. So there would be additional demands put on the funds, but there would be additional funds to meet those demands. And as I said, most counties in California have made the decision that the funds will be put to good use, and it does multiply their own ability to use the funds that they are already committing to this purpose.
Does it make it more difficult for Fresno County because they have this contract with a community regional medical center? And what a lot of counties are doing at this point is they're bringing in these clinics, primary care, federally funded clinics, to serve this population instead of doing it at a hospital. And in Fresno County, the problem seems to be, or the discussion is around the fact that we have a contract with the hospital who does the care, which everyone agrees cost more.
Well, there are a variety of combinations of service providers, and there are clinics and there are hospitals and there are clinics associated with hospitals, and every county is different. And it would be wrong of me to speculate about the nature of the contract relationship between Fresno County and Community Medical Center. There are a number of services that are contracted for and provided, and the extent to which the county would need to modify that contract for this purpose is beyond my awareness. I've not looked at the facts or the details of that, and it's beyond my jurisdiction to do so.
Now, what could this mean for us in any way? And I don't know if you can answer this, that if, let's say, we stick with withdrawing our application and we don't choose to implement the low-income health plan, what could that mean in 2014 if indeed the Health Care Reform Act is implemented?
What many counties are doing, and the design of the Bridge to Reform in 2010 that allowed for this low-income health program in the counties, was to do two things. We focused first in our conversation about the benefit to the people who need services that would be able to get them with this additional federal money. The second part of the program is the reform of the delivery system itself. Many of the counties are modifying their relationships with their clinics and looking to have health homes or medical homes or bundled payments. There are a number of innovations that are allowed for under this Bridge to Reform that will be expanded on once we get to full health care reform in 2014. So the counties who are participating are able to reform their delivery system, use more primary care, for example, get prevention services, change the reimbursement of co-pays, for example, on preventative care, so regular checkups are, there is less cost to the beneficiary than when they're sick, and a variety of ways that they incentivize wellness and moving away from the more expensive chronic care treatment. So the counties do have an opportunity to reform their delivery systems with the use of this federal money in advance of 2014.
So basically, it's an opportunity for counties to access federal dollars to really start the process and not have to wait until the last minute.
Yes. And my approach as the chair of the Health Benefit Exchange Board and our efforts to implement health care reform as quickly and as efficiently as possible is the belief that many of the principles of health delivery reform are critically important to the whole healthcare system, whether or not we get the full implementation of the Affordable Care Act. We are choosing at the state not to sort of wring our hands and worry about what the court may do or what the 2012 election might result in, but to use the federal funds that are already available to begin the process of changing our system. We are building a California Health Benefit Exchange as we speak to be ready to create a fair marketplace for people to buy their health insurance, whether they're employed or not, or whether their employer offers insurance or not. They will have a place that they can compare services, what providers are available, what the cost is, what their share of cost through either co-payments or deductibles. All of that information will be in a transparent marketplace for the use of all citizens. We believe that that is a value even if the promise of the Affordable Care Act is diminished or worse, eliminated. We will still have an operating exchange, and that is our goal for 2014 in California. So in many ways, we are using both the funds and the rule of law that exists under the Affordable Care Act now to make as much improvement in the healthcare delivery system as possible without worrying about what happens after 2014. And the changes that we're looking to encourage in the private sector will benefit all users of healthcare and all payers of healthcare. If we can make the reforms that encourage prevention, encourage early intervention, that diminish the use of high-cost, high-intense medical interventions and hospitalizations, that will benefit ratepayers of insurance, it will benefit employers, and it will benefit the users of healthcare, the patients and the people who can get higher quality care for less cost. Clearly, what we have seen, and the academic evidence is just completely irrefutable, that higher cost does not equal higher quality or better care. And our challenge is to make the changes in a smart, efficient way that gets the best care at the best time to people for a value that does that reduces the overall cost of healthcare.
So basically what you're saying is for those who might be waiting to see whether or not what many now call Obamacare is fully implemented, the fact is change is coming to healthcare and California is going to be a part of that change.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Juanita.
Okay. So this is an opportunity for counties to start the process now.
Yes. That is exactly what the low-income health program was designed to do, to help counties who have obligations to meet the needs of adults who are not now eligible for Medi-Cal and are the responsibility of counties to meet their basic health care needs. This would give them a bridge, a basic set of circumstances that are beyond what they're currently required, but less than they will be eligible for once they are on Medi-Cal in 2014.
And I know you can't speak for the county, but it is my understanding that the state is still open and they are hoping Fresno County, as well as any other counties, will continue to look at this opportunity.
Absolutely, Juanita. We are ready, willing, and able to help answer their concerns, to address the issues that have been raised to the extent we have the jurisdiction and flexibility to do that. And our door is definitely open from a technical advice standpoint or in any way that we can be helpful to meet the needs of the people of Fresno County and the surrounding areas that are served by Fresno County.
Well, we thank you so much for your time today and for shedding some additional light on this topic with us. We know this is not the end. There is much more to talk about when it comes to health care in California.
My heart is still there, and I wish you all the very best, and we will provide whatever help we can.
That was Diana Dooley, the Secretary of the California Department of Health and the Human Services, and who formerly was a vice president at Children's Hospital here in Fresno. Now, to wrap this up, we're back with Kevin Hamilton. We heard a lot, Kevin, about The contract, that being one of the big stumbling blocks. What is it that you know about with the contract that is making this somewhat challenging?
Well, the contract sets a capped rate that the county has to pay for the health care of a fairly large number of folks, regardless of what the actual cost for that health care is. If you look at it through that very narrow lens, the county, of course, would not be interested in leaving that contract. It's a very good deal for them. Community Medical Center will tell you that they are at 3 or 4 to 1 on the dollar. For every dollar they get from the county, they're spending $3 to $4. It's interesting to me that the county very callously says, well, you know, you signed the contract. I guess we just have to stick with that. But that's politics for you. I think it's important in those cost assessments to consider where the care takes place. The care that they're paying for is taking place in the most expensive place it could possibly happen, which is the hospital-based setting, the emergency room, the ambulatory care clinics at Community Medical Center, which do great medicine and provide great care, but still are part of a hospital system. And everything in a hospital system costs more than it does outside of the system. Due to significant regulatory challenges that they have to meet, licensing requirements, and general costs of operation. So what we're talking about is how do you diminish that cost to where the county, with its matching money, the $20 million it would get from the federal government for this primary care side of this business, how do you do this for $40 million, take care of a group of people you've been spending $80 million on? And the way you do that is you spread the cost around out to people who can provide that care at a third of the cost that the hospital-based system can. And that would be the community health system, community health center system, and other partners of that nature doing business out in the county.
And so when the county talks about the risks involved, their concern was that may not be enough money to do the job, and then the county would be left with the tab.
That's their concern. The interesting thing to me is they are making this decision without knowing the facts. Supervisor Fachigian was very vehement in her claims of risk to the county, and she threw out numbers on a fairly regular basis. I got confused after a while because she said $30 million, then she said $80 million, then she said $60 million. Then we were back to $30 or $40 million, and I think that kind of demonstrated her confusion around the issue, and her genuine concern that the county would be overexposed there. I think the solution to that is to analyze that risk in an organized fashion through an agency that actually can do that kind of work. This isn't rocket science. We're not in the 15th century here. We have the tools through various kinds of actuarial tables to be able to determine what it would cost to make this change. And the county needs to move forward in that arena.
Okay. Thanks again, Kevin. As we said, this is not the end of this discussion. It's a huge discussion, not only here in Fresno County, but across the country as people prepare for health care reform. When we come back, fighting obesity with the song. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition.
Support for Valley Edition comes from Chevron and Avicennia Wellness Center, online at avecinia.com.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Juanita Stevenson. This weekend, a new theatrical production in Central California takes a unique approach to raising awareness about an important health issue that affects thousands of local residents. FM 89's Joe Moore has this report.
It's Thursday night, and inside a small classroom at a church in Clovis, a group of actors has gathered to put the finishing touches on a new original production.
Let's go back to that piece where this builds up before you take off into that speech.
It's a theater production of 4 vignettes plus an original song, all focused on an issue that's having a big impact on many Valley residents, obesity. The Weight of Things, or El Peso de las Cosas, was written by Augustine Lira. It's a collaborative production with the Central California Regional Obesity Prevention Program and Lira's group, Teatro de la Tierra, which he co-leads with Patricia Wells.
You're not gonna believe it, but my small kid came home and he told me, "Mom, I don't exercise at school anymore because in the schools they don't have PE anymore."
According to a study by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, 38% of Hispanic children between the ages of 2 and 19 are obese. That's compared with 31% of all children of that age group. The production examines the challenges many Valley parents face in trying to feed their families nutritious food and ward off the many diseases that often go along with obesity, like diabetes. Sometimes it's an issue of access. Other times, as one of Lyra's characters says, it's about cost. Healthy food is often more expensive.
Vegetables cost more than rice and beans. My family has to eat.
Lira, who co-founded the group El Teatro Campesino with Luis Valdez in 1965, is considered one of the fathers of the Chicano movement and says working on this new project gave him a new perspective on the obesity epidemic.
Well, we're all affected by obesity all of our lives to some extent, but I was not personally aware of the situation until I started researching it, and I just found out so much stuff that it just drove me crazy. I decided to write some pieces about it.
One of the production's four vignettes finds a group of residents in a town hall meeting sharing their frustrations about the lack of access to healthy food and neighborhoods that aren't built to make healthy lifestyles easy. Neighborhoods that lack even basic infrastructure like sidewalks and where it's not safe for kids to go out and play.
Many of us as mothers, we know that our kids, they have to eat healthy food and that they have to exercise. But honestly, Julia, it's not possible the way that our neighborhoods are. I would never allow my kids to go out into those dangerous streets. No lo permita, no.
And one problem can often lead to another.
I hate to say it, but my kids, they spend most of the time in the tiny backyard, or what is worse, washing TV and eating junk food.
The issues of proper nutrition and health are especially important to one of the production's actors, Jorge Romero.
A year ago, I went to my doctor for my regular checkup, and he told me you are a borderline diabetic, so I have to change.
Lira hopes that this production can help raise awareness of the dangers of obesity, change people's eating habits, and their communities.
Luckily, because of all the people that I hopefully hear this message, that they'll be able to do something about the circumstances in which they live in. But it's very difficult to fight obesity on your own because there's too many factors, too many things that are involved in it.
For Valley Public Radio, I'm Joe Moore.
Thank you, Joe. Now, joining us now is Patricia Wells. She's the producer of The Weight of Things. You heard bits and pieces of that production and Joe Moore's piece. And Genoveva Islas Hooker, Regional Program Director, the Regional Obesity Prevention Program. And both of you can answer this question. What kind of impact are you hoping this play will have?
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, so thank you for inviting us. And I'm delighted to be able to talk to you about this play because for us, what we hope the impact will be is first and foremost, we want to raise consciousness around the issues of obesity for twofold. One is to help incorporate more community voices into the fight for obesity prevention. And the second is really to raise the consciousness among our elected, appointed officials and representatives so that they too can become champions and advocates for creating the type of communities that promote healthy eating and active living.
And for me, it's very important living in the inner city of Fresno also to introduce ideas to my neighbors, to the low-income community, to the immigrant community, and to all the rest of the community about returning to really to the old ways of eating. Instead of going to eating at McDonald's or Jack in the Box, or I think all of us do when we're in a hurry. But for too long now, for too many decades, this has been growing and growing, and the obesity problem is growing, and it's really pretty bad when you say 2/3 of the population in this country is considered overweight and obese. So I think that through this performance, it's really like just opening the subject for people to see, because we found, and I have a family member also who's extremely obese, and he's had three open heart surgeries this past mm-hmm. year. He's only a year older than I am, and so it's very close to me, the subject is. And I think that it's very difficult for people to understand the reasons why people eat like that. And I think that at least in this performance, we expose those things. And we even go as far as to say why you know, the corporations are not trying to scale back, as you can see in the advertisements, everything that's coming out. So we have our own – we're going to use humor. We use humor and we use drama and everything, that we're trying to open up the subject, because we found out, even in looking for a title for this, it says, well, what do you call it? You know, I mean, the word fat, you know, it's so taboo. And, you know, most families and most people, they don't want to talk about that. You know, it's just, it's a very touchy subject. Don't tell me anything. And so we did a lot of different things, including research. And we sent out a lady to do a survey about this subject. So we've brought together all kinds of information and sort of synthesized it and tried to present it in an entertaining way.
And it really is, excuse me, just another way to try to educate people. But I think what you see in the play is you make it about the people that you are trying to impact.
Okay? Yes.
And so how do you think this could be just another tool or a better way to try to impact people who are struggling with this whole issue of obesity?
Yeah. I think that, you know, Agustin and the comments that you heard him make, that there are so many factors that impact.
We should, and let's mention that Agustin Lira, he's the writer with,
yes.
He has a pretty distinguished history
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
He's national Heritage Fellow in 2007. We were out in Washington, D.C., and he was honored as a national treasure, one of the master artists, considered master artists of the country. So he's been doing music and theater and compositions. And before we forget, he wrote a song for this thing, and it's called Taps for Coke.
Yeah. So I was just going to say that he raises a really good point, that there are so many factors in these issues of obesity and obesity prevention. And for too long, our single focus has been on changing people's behavior, that, you know, people need to be responsible to eat better. People need to be responsible to be physically active. And I don't want to dismiss that, but I want to add in that it's very hard for people to lead healthy lifestyles when their environments do not support healthy eating and active living. And I think that that's the beauty of this format, to present it in a play, is that you begin to see now the gamut behind
exactly.
what makes obesity and obesity prevention so difficult.
You talk about some of the barriers.
Exactly.
And I think I can remember when there was absolutely no supermarket in West Fresno. People did not have access,
exactly.
you know, to something that we kind of take for granted. There's mm-hmm. one, you know, almost on every corner. Mm-hmm. But in West Fresno, there was no supermarket. And so how does that impact a community when they don't have a place to go and shop for a variety of foods?
Hugely, hugely. What's available in terms of amenities in our community has a great impact in our lifestyles. If we have a grocery store, if we have a park, if there are sidewalks, if there are streetlights, all of those things enable us to get access to the healthy food or be physically active. And when our communities are deficit in those basic things, then people adapt and people make choices based on what's available. So if the only thing available to you is a fast food restaurant or a liquor store, that's where you're going to go. And you're going to make the choices and selections that are available there. So what we want, and the reason I mentioned we want more consciousness by our represented and elected officials, is because we need communities to be resourced so that they do have access to healthy foods. Grocery stores should be in every neighborhood. Every neighborhood should have a park or a safe place for children to be physically active. And that's part of the advocacy and the beauty behind this play, is that it is helping us lift up that social consciousness.
And I think that it really it takes a long time to change the cultural authority about anything that we have in society that's taken decades and hundreds of years to, you know. The whole idea that, you know, even the idea of saying McDonald's is doing something bad, you know, people think it's, oh, my God, how could you be saying that, you know, because they're such sponsors of so many things. But really what they give to the community is very little. It's a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of their earnings. So really the harm that they do by selling the kind of food that is high in fat, that is low in nutrition, it's really affecting the Latino community. And I have been polling people in the Bay Area also, you know, the very poor families. And I think it's all interrelated. The idea that, for example, in the inner cities, that the gangs, people can't go walking as soon as the sun starts setting. And it's true in the inner city in Fresno. So how can you expect people to, like, take a walk in the afternoon after work or whatever? So I think these are the things that people can begin to speak about, because I think people power is the best way to go. It's giving the power back to the people and letting them know that we have the power to change those things.
Where are we in the fight against obesity? As you mentioned, it is a national issue, but here in Kern County, I mean, not Kern County, but Fresno County, we have some pretty high rates. They're way up there.
We have extremely high rates in the San Joaquin Valley. In fact, there was a recent report released by the California Center for Public Health Advocacy, which had some good news and bad news. The good news is that we seem to see a decrease in the trend of the obesity rates across California. But when you look in the Central Valley as a whole, we're not faring better than we were a year or two ago. So what the sort of message is that in those places where they have really taken approaches to create healthier communities, that they're having some very powerful outcomes. And what we need to do here in the Central Valley is really double our efforts to make sure that every place where people live here is a healthy community. And there's things happening nationally. You know, we're absolutely grateful to Michelle Obama and the attention that she's brought to childhood obesity. And I think that there's funders across California and across the nation that are using their philanthropic dollars to also make a dent in this obesity epidemic. But we still have a long way to go. And certainly because of the Valley's geography, because of the Valley's demographics, because we're the poorest region in the state of California, all of that's affecting the ability to make progress here. But I'm committed, and I think that we will see results.
You know, we do have the Building Healthy Communities Initiative.
Absolutely.
And they're really working and pouring a lot of dollars and attention into our area in doing just exactly what they say, building healthy communities.
Absolutely. Building Healthy Communities is funded by the California Endowment, and the California Endowment has been CROP's primary funder for the last 5 years. So the California Endowment's in it, just like Kaiser is with their HEAL program and a lot of the other funders.
Okay. And the remaining time we have, let's talk a little bit about the play, the production. It opens, or people will be able to see it starting?
It's free, first of all. It's free at the Unitarian Universalist Church this coming Saturday at 3 o'clock. And that's in near the – it's on alluvial between Willow and Chestnut. And the second performance will be on Sunday also at 3 o'clock at the Sanctuary EOC theater space in downtown. So – I think what you'll see are community members. We also have...
That's what I wanted to ask you.
Yes.
The people participating in the play, are they all local folks?
Yes, everyone's local. And three of the people already have experience, but they've been working with us. And we also have some little kids, some children that will be singing in between the scenes, because we're musicians and we have a free music and ukulele classes that we offer at the Centro Binacional. So these children are also the actors in one of the scenes. And part of the reason we're having the performances in the middle of the day is because we want to encourage families to come so they can see other children. And we hope to open up the Pandora's box and their imagination about when they see the last scene with this clown who's I don't want to say too much about it, but it's manipulation.
You don't want to give it away.
It's the manipulation of how, you know, enticing children with colors and sounds and you know, so we're going to use the same thing, you know, and try to entice the children with colors and sounds and happiness and fun to see if we can begin to, like I said, I don't think that we can make the great changes I would like to see, but I think that we can begin to open up the subject. And I think that this I think that we cross a lot of little boundaries there, and we'll see what people think. But because we have a history of doing plays of social justice.
Yes, social consciousness.
And social consciousness. So, and I have said things, I'm keeping from saying other things, but there will be surprises. We put that, you know, we pin the tail right on the donkey where it belongs, because our government is very responsible for what is happening also, because they are, the monies, they should be subsidizing local farmers to grow local food, because then you cut out the diesels, you cut out, you know, why are we eating tomatoes from Chile when, you know, we could be growing them right here? What is the whole idea? Whatever happened to growing your own vegetables, you know? So that would help globally, really, if you think about it, if everyone were to plant their food again. It sounds, you know, people say, what, me plant a garden?
Well, we do have a lot of community gardens, so that is a movement that is taking shape and taking place, and it is helping communities.
Absolutely. There's a growing movement of community gardens. There's people being informed about what they can do if they're in an apartment or in some affordable housing that maybe doesn't give them some yard space. And absolutely, Patricia's right. We need to help cultivate and support that movement so that more people have access to healthy foods as well.
Okay. Well, thank you both for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you very
people
much.
People go see the play.
Absolutely.
Well, that is all for today's Valley Edition. You can hear audio archives and subscribe to our podcast online at kbpr.org. We welcome your comments and suggestions. You can email us at talk@kbpr.org. For audio engineer Marv Allen, producer Tracy Sharman, production and operations manager Don Weaver, and executive producer Joe Moore, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, Kaiser Permanente, and the California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org.